Thanks for joining us on The Exchange with Ed Stetzer, where we discuss true thoughts and theology. Our featured guest is John Maxwell. Inc. magazine named him the number one leadership and management expert in the world. He served as the senior pastor of Skyline Church for 14 years. He's written more than 70 books, many of which were New York Times bestsellers. He's the founder of Enjoy, Maximum Impact, the John Maxwell Team, ISS, and Equip. Before we hear from Ed and John, though, let's hear this challenge from leadership consultant Jenny Catron.
Pastors, you know, are pastors first because that's their gifting, that's their heart, that's what God has called them to. But the, at least the American church really requires a high level of leadership when you're leading a church. And so I think one of the important things for pastors is, yes, do study leadership, understand what it means to lead authentically and lead from a healthy place, and just to develop some of the skills that are required to lead an organization. But then secondly, bring in the people around you. That was one of the things that I've so respected and admired about my time at Crosspoint, was that Pete understood that bringing in leaders around him that could help kind of balance out those gifts and among the team. And so I think that's important too. There's an element of, yes, grow and develop some of those skills, because I do feel like leadership can be developed. You know, there's sometimes an argument on that.
I agree with you.
But I do think leadership can be developed. So do grow. Don't ignore that. But then secondly, make sure you're balancing the team out with people who can bring some of those gifts to the table that maybe you're not wired to.
I honestly grow insecure as I get older. Even when you hot, comes a day when you get colder. Comes a day when you slower, and time is taking its toll. 45 on the back of the jersey upon your soul. I'm scared of letting go. I don't know what the future holds. In my nightmares, I have nightmares. I'm quite scared of what's right and fair, how I fare in eternity. And will I hear well done when he turns to me? Or will I hear, you care too much about all this stuff? It really don't matter. You chased the wind and you won and you got to the top of a 2-foot ladder. What's after I can capture all this mess my heart was after? Will I end up empty-handed when I stand before my master? After the show, after the set, after the music stops, what's next? Did I master the mathematics of a passive disaster, adding my selfish ambition, all the while subtracting what matters? And I'm scared of falling and failing in front of all of my foes. I fear some friends are unfaithful, so I keep my small circle closed. I don't want no handouts or favors, no functional saviors. I'ma tell that truth till it kills me, and I'm chilling with my creator. Jesus, 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 Jesus. To all of my haters, for the ones who think I forgot them, and the ones who won't let me say it, I ain't scared no more. I'm unashamed.
John, thanks for joining us on The Exchange. It's so great to have you.
I'm just delighted to be with you, Ed.
Well, good. Well, let's jump right in. Because one of the more fascinating things, we're going to talk about your book, Intentional Living, but I want to go back and talk about something about intentional pastoring. Because I first came across you in a pastoral kind of setting. I got cassette tapes from you, brother. Back in the day. You know, my kids were like, what are those things? Exactly. But I
they
love
were
them.
Pink, remember?
I'm not judging.
Like I was starting a Mary Kay organization or something.
Okay, so I did a research project on church revitalization. I think it's the best book I ever wrote, Comeback Churches. And in there, I really kind of came in not wanting leadership, because, you know, in the late 80s, early 90s, everything was leadership, leadership, leadership. And I was kind of like, man, let's just make it prayer and study and whatever. We did the research and it came back leadership. I mean, everything rises and falls on leadership. Somebody should make that a law. But when we surveyed, all right, here's the interesting part. I know I'm setting up long, but I want to make sure we get the context. There were 300 plus of them. Most revitalization took place with a new pastor, but some of them were the same pastor that stayed before and after. Oh. But they had seen the church decline for years, turned around to growth.
Beautiful.
So we contacted them and say, what happened, and got some details. But they cited you more than anybody else as the person who helped them be the kind of leader that could lead church revitalization. Why do you think that's so important in a church, is leadership itself in revitalization and more?
Well, I think that I've always said, in fact, I think the greatest way to be able to point at somebody and say they're a good leader is for them to take something that's not going well, that's going downhill, and they stop the negative momentum, level it out, And then they turn it around and get positive momentum. And I think that that's probably the greatest compliment you can give to any person that leads, that they took something that wasn't going well, they stopped that negative and turned around and made positive. And so I think when you're doing the revitalization surveys and projects, basically what you were hearing is some of those, especially the ones who had stayed in the church, yeah, watched it go down, then they learned leadership principles, yeah, and were able to flatten it out and turn it around. I think it's a great, again, tribute to the fact that it is true, everything rises and falls, yeah, on leadership.
But let me, you know, the book of Proverbs says, you know, let another man's lips praise you, not your own. But it was John Maxwell's leadership writing that really was so significant to them.
Well,
that
because
gift
I was
to the
first.
Okay.
Right. Truthfully.
Okay.
And I think a lot of people forget. If you go back in the 80s, there were no leadership books.
Yeah.
It was management stuff.
Yeah. It was secular world stuff that people tried to apply.
That's exactly
But you were
right.
A pastor and a leader who stepped
and
into that space.
And I was, you know, when I wrote Developing the Leader Within You, yeah, I not only put a leadership book out, but I put a leadership book out that said you can develop yourself and you can become a leader, mm-hmm, which, again, up until that time, people thought you were either born and you
right,
didn't have it.
Right.
So it was at a very, timing was very important, and I just happened to be very fortunate to be on that leadership front. In fact, when I started doing leadership conferences, Ed, no one came.
Yeah.
And I would say, well, why don't you come? Mm-hmm. And they said, well, I'm already a leader.
Yeah.
Because they thought leadership just positionally. Yeah. And so I started doing what I called increasing your influence, yeah, conferences.
Fascinating.
And
so that was an intentional rebranding.
Level, yeah, the, yeah, five, yeah, levels of leadership, yeah, for 5-8 years was the five levels of influence.
Nice.
And when people say, oh, I want to increase my influence, yeah, so they come, so I do that. And all of a sudden,
it was leadership.
I was just doing soft leadership for,
wow,
them until then it got accepted.
Well,
and
but it seems to sort of go in waves.
And yes,
so
it
there
does.
Was a, you know, Leadership Journal, which is kind of a, you know, well-known publication that's actually now ceasing publication. But Leadership Journal did a little quote. I was at this conference. I don't remember saying it, but I said, because in the early 2000s, we were sort of like this anti-leadership angst kind of arises up again. And someone said, well, what do you think they should do? And I said, well, I think I ought to go get a John Maxwell book. And so they sort of quoted that, and people wrote me letters saying, well, what do you, but here's the deal. Like early 2000, like, well, now we're against leaders. It's all those CEO models of the 90s, and then it's back and forth. But how do we have a longevity view, a long, healthy view of leadership in a local church? Because it matters.
Well, it does matter, but the reason we have an unhealthy view of leadership is because we think it's secular.
Right,
and
clearly,
it's not,
I hear it all the time.
It's not at all.
Okay.
In fact, when I crossed over,
yeah,
I remember I went to the largest lumber broker company in the world at a resort in Kiowa Island. Just their top executives, not maybe 35, 40 people. And I taught leadership all day. And at the end of the day, one of the senior VPs raised his hand and he said, John, he said, I'm telling you, your stuff is different.
Hmm.
And it's fresh. He said, talk to me. They didn't know my background. He said,
yeah,
talk to me. Where did you get your leadership material? And I smiled. I said, you don't want to know.
Hmm.
And of course, we do want to.
Yeah, of course.
So I said, I'm going to tell you, but when I tell you, you're going to be disappointed. And then I told him, I said, everything I taught you today, every leadership principle is right out of the Bible.
Hmm.
And they groaned. They went, oh, you know. And then I said, I know you got a cocktail hour. I'll hang down there. I'll stand over there in the corner. If you have any questions about God, come and see me. For an hour and a half that evening, people stood in line and I answered questions. And I walked out there. My life was totally changed. That's when I began to understand two things. One is that people in the secular community were going to be receptive to the true picture of God if we presented him rightly. But the second thing that really just grabbed hold of me was the fact that the leadership principles in the Bible work right across the board.
Interesting.
And so when I look at leadership, I don't look at the secular world and say, oh, we're kind of being like them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sitting over there and saying, if they've got it, they got it from the Word.
Interesting. Now, but some of it seems to be, you know, I fall back on my own background here. Missiology is my field. I mean, we see that people lead differently in Asia or in South America or in Africa. And so some of it's cultural.
Oh, a lot of it is.
And some of it's universal. So how do you see some of those things transferring across cultures? You say leadership is biblical, but the application of such is cultural.
Totally.
Okay.
And in fact, when I wrote The Laws of Leadership, we put it through a grid.
Mm-hmm.
It had to work for both genders. Mm-hmm. It had to work regardless of time.
Yeah.
And it had to work regardless of culture.
Okay.
And
hence being that these are laws that
they cross over.
Across, irrefutable, got to be.
And you know, equip our leadership training organization in the Christian world has now trained 6 million leaders in every country of the world.
Yeah.
And so we fleshed this out. And what we have found is that, yes, cultures are different, but the need for leadership in every culture, mm-hmm, is there.
Yeah.
And the need to learn how to lead well is something that I think, again, biblically is there. Now you apply it to your culture.
Sure, apply it to culture. Okay, so what would you say to Christians who would say, you know, I don't need to learn some of the cultural applications. I just need to, here's what I hear all the time, people. People say, we just need to preach the gospel and love people. Don't worry about leadership and systems and structure. What would you say to people listening who might think that?
Well, I would say that's very simplistic and stupid.
Okay. Subtle, John.
Yeah,
subtle.
Yeah. Okay. And the reason for that is you and I both know, Paul said, I became all things to all men.
Yeah.
That I might win some. A man who went from different cultures and planted churches understood that the first thing you do is not even bring the gospel. You got to connect with people, and you connect with them where they are. Mm-hmm. I tell people all the time, you can't lead them until you find them. And we forgot the finding part. We just kind of get up and declare visions and then wonder why no one's following us, when we need to forget that and go connect with the people, find the common ground, and then take them where they can go.
Our featured guest today is world-renowned leadership expert and author John Maxwell. We have the second part of their conversation after we hear from another excellent leader named John, Dr. John Piper. He's going to talk to us about the relationship between the gospel and the glory of God.
If God does everything for his glory, why is he not an egomaniac? I mean, I think I have in my file at least five testimonies from very public figures of why they've turned away from God because God is so into God. God magnifies God. God exalts God. God glorifies God. It's all over the Bible. And so what that little interchange about joy did for me was make me realize he's not an egomaniac, because when God lifts up God, when God magnifies the beauty of God, the power of God, the sovereignty of God, the wisdom of God, the love of God, the justice of God, the truth of God, all the things about himself, when he lifts himself up, he's doing it for me to see and enjoy. Which means that God's seeking to be glorified is virtually the same as him seeking to satisfy me. And I've turned it around and said, it's true, biblical, that God is most glorified in me when I am most satisfied in him. So he's not an egomaniac. He's loving me when he lifts himself up for me to enjoy, because I was made for the glory of God. My heart here has a glory of God-shaped vacuum in it. And unless God gives me God, unless God shows me God, then I'm going to be unhappy all my eternity. Which brings us maybe finally to the gospel. What? 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 4 through 6. The God of this age has blinded the minds of unbelievers to keep them from seeing. Now listen to this phrase. The light of the gospel of the glory of Christ, who is the image of God. The gospel is the gospel of the glory of Christ. And I think that has two meanings. One is that he was displaying his glory on the cross, and he was being glorious on the cross. He did the most glorious thing on the cross, thus purchasing my new birth and capacity to see the glory that he was displaying on the cross. He was paying the price for me to enjoy his glory, and he was being the most glorious person imaginable when he did that great act of love. So the glory of God comes to its highest climax in the glory of his grace displayed most fully in Jesus Christ, displayed most fully when he died in the place of sinners and rose again. So the glory of God is right at the heart of the gospel, according to 2 Corinthians 4:4-4:6. And maybe one last thing, that the nitty-gritty practical is this. John Piper is a sinner. And every day I'm tempted to have attitudes, thoughts, say things, do things that are defective, hurtful, proud, selfish. What is the gospel way to slay that dragon? And my answer has become over the years, sin is never performed out of duty. You only do sin because sin is lying to you and saying, you'll be happier, it'll feel good, you'll have the strokes of getting the last word, it will go well for you if you just do this sin. You have to slay that promise of pleasure with the promise of a superior pleasure. And in the end, the highest pleasure is knowing, loving, and delighting in the glory of God manifest in Jesus Christ, which means it has become a liberator from sin. Fighting to see and savor the glory of God is not only a great honor to him, it's a great liberation for one who battles sin every day.
John, I have a John Maxwell shelf, and now I've got to add another book, right? We got another John Maxwell book on the shelf.
I'm sorry.
So it's all good. It's all good. When you publish them, I line up for them and recommend them so widely. But you've written over 75 books over your career, which makes me wonder. First, do you have any unpublished thought? But let's hold that. But what's different about intentional living?
Well, of the books I've written, this is the one I'm most excited about. Because this is something I've been wanting to write for about 4 or 5 years, because I believe everybody wants to get better.
Yeah.
And so I keep asking myself, what is something that I can give to people that will help them get better efficiently and quickly?
Yeah.
And it hit me that if I could just teach people how to intentionally live, immediately everything would get better. And let me make a visual statement here, Ed. Everything worthwhile is uphill.
Yeah.
Everything. There's nothing that you can talk about that's worthwhile that you coasted to or accidentally found. And if you're going to go uphill, you have to be intentional. Mm-hmm. And you not only need to be intentional once, you need to be intentional every day, because what I basically say is life is uphill. Mm-hmm. Significance is uphill. Mm-hmm. So the only way I'm going to get there is by being intentional. And I tell people all the time, you don't have to change your whole life. I mean, when people talk about change, sometimes they go, oh my gosh, I got so many areas of my life. I say, let's just start with one area. Yeah. Let's just be intentional. You don't even have to be 100% all day, but could you be 100% for 30 minutes?
Yeah, that's good.
Let's just do 30 minutes. Yeah. Could you, and in that 30 minutes, could you do something significant? And I define significance as intentionally adding value to people.
Okay.
And I get that from, again, the Bible.
Yeah, yeah.
Jesus thought it was very significant when people came to prison and visited people and, mm-hmm. and clothed people and fed people. In fact, he thought it was so significant. He said, let me explain something to you. When you do that to me.
Mm.
Now, I think the church has lost the big picture. I don't think we see the big picture. I think we look at these acts and we think, well, it's the right thing to do and it's good. But I don't think they see Jesus. And the moment that I think we think about it, and by the way, the good ones, the ones who did all the visiting and the clothing and the feeding, they said, well, when did we see you? When did we feed you? When did we visit you? They didn't have a clue.
Sure.
And the ones who didn't do any good, they asked the same question. Yeah. When did we not do this? And what it shows me is that both sides, neither one of them saw the big picture. Mm-hmm. But just think about it, Ed. If those that were doing good would have seen the picture, the real picture, the big picture, don't you think they'd have done more good?
Mm-hmm.
And those that weren't doing good, if they could have seen the big picture, don't you think they would have started doing mm-hmm. good? Of course. And here's what, that's what intentional living does. Intentional living causes us to now begin to understand that we can lead our life, not just accept our life. Mm. When I was a pastor in Lancaster, my second church, my assistant for Christmas gave me a book. And the title of the book was The Greatest Story Ever Told. And I got so excited, I thought, my gosh, The Greatest Story Ever Told. This will be amazing. I wonder what it is. So I opened the book.
Yeah.
Much to my surprise, all the pages were blank.
Hmm.
And she wrote on the first page, John, your life is before you. You fill these pages with good acts, kind words, matters of your heart.
Wow.
Add value to people, live a life of significance.
Wow.
And Ed, that was the first day I said, oh my goodness, I can be the author of my story.
Mm.
You see, most people, they don't write their story.
Right.
They read their story,
right.
Ed. They read it.
Sure.
Someone else does because they've been passive. They've been unintentional. And so I'm passionate about, you can tell, I'm very passionate about the book.
Yeah, yeah.
Because all my life I've tried to help people and lift the lid.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, every day I ask myself, just like you do, Ed, how can I help people?
Sure.
How can I add value to people? That's you. That's me. That's a lot of leaders. That's no big deal. But I'll tell you what is a big deal. When all of a sudden I realized, if I can just tweak them and get them to go from unintentional to intentional, from good intentions, which are worthless, to good actions.
Yeah.
If I could just, and the bridge between good intentions and good actions is intentional living. If I can just teach them how to live intentionally. So the book is all about how do you do that? How do you find your purpose in your life?
But it's also, unlike maybe some of the past ones, it's much more personal. Why more personal?
Yeah, it is personal. Well, because when I ask myself, how do I transfer this? With integrity, I said, the only way I can transfer this is to tell my journey.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's two things that are very, very different in this book. It's much more personal than any of my books, and there's an awful lot of faith in it. And as you know, I write for an audience that is not always Christian.
Yeah, which is essential, yeah.
Yeah, which is intentional. And so when I wrote it, it had so much faith in it, my publisher brought me in and said, boy, John, I think you got a little carried away with faith there. And I said, I know, I understand. I understand even why you're bothered by that. But I said, it's my story.
Yeah.
And I can't tell my story without telling my faith. It's who I am. And they gave me 100% approval and bought into it. And so I'm very excited about the book because the book is my story, but that isn't that important. But it's a story of what I learned from a young child on from my father and from other people about how to live an intentional life and how to be significant in it.
Hmm. It's you know, those of us who've known you for a long time and really been influenced by you, and we knew you as the pastor of Skyline, you know, Wesleyan, and then the resources and the leadership. But for those who maybe don't know, I mean, you're the leading leadership expert in the world in most people's mind, and not in the Christian world, but in the world. And again, I'll be the one who praises you in the business world, and so how do you bring your faith, and how do you, maybe sometimes do you not bring your faith? How do you balance the faith thing when speaking to business leaders and others?
Well, that's a beautiful question, and I wish when I was a pastor I knew what I know now. I would have done so much better. Sometimes I really get a little frustrated at how many things I missed as a pastor. But here's, in preparing people in evangelism, here's what, when people say, well, okay, how do you go out there and be salt and light? By doing my job well and exceeding expectations. I don't carry my faith to them first. I fulfill the needs they have.
Mm-hmm.
I add value to them. Meet their expectations and then some. And the reason for that is I understand I have to deserve this audience to talk about God.
Mm-hmm.
And if people don't respect me or connect with me or relate to me, they're never going to connect with the God that I love. I mean, why would they?
Mm-hmm.
And so my first job is to add value to people, serve them, and connect with them relationally until there comes a time when they say, boy, John, I've been watching your life. Let's talk about it.
Yeah.
Now I can talk about my faith.
Sure.
A very well-known CEO, which I wouldn't mention here, but that I'd gone and worked for his company for a couple of years, and one day he just took me to the office and he said, I don't even know what to do with you. He said, you just keep adding value to our company. And he said, what do you want?
Hmm.
And I smiled and I said, I just want to be your friend. Want to add value to you. And no, he said, everybody wants something. And he kind of kept pressing me. I said, well, let me just say this. I would love to add value to you in such a way that someday you would just look at me and say, could you just talk to me about your faith?
Mm. Wow.
And of course, a typical CEO, he said, all right, I got it, that's it. I knew there was something. Tell me about your faith, tell me about your faith. I said, no, you're not ready.
Wow.
You're not ready. Yeah. And I met with him every quarter. We'd play golf or I'd speak to his company. And about a year and a half later, his wife was dying with cancer. He literally called me, found out the bad news, called me, and I went over and both was able to share Christ and lead him to Christ. But I would tell people, be a person that adds value to people. Mm-hmm. Become intentional in your living. And as you add value to people, you'll get the opportunity. But if you don't add value to people, they don't want to really hear about your God anyway. Hmm.
John, I've literally told tens of thousands of people through my writing and through even public speaking that they need to get some help in leadership, and John Maxwell is a key source in that. So I'm deeply in debt for you in my life, but also I'm a John Maxwell evangelist as well. But with the new book, you're talking about this intentional living. What are some things? What can listeners do now, practical steps, to get started living intentionally?
Well, there's a free online resource that they can go to, start7day.com.
Say that again?
Start7day.com.
Okay.
And this is a free resource.
Yeah.
And then go online, mm-hmm. and I talk about 3 minutes on video every day, and I give them for 7 days suggestions of how they can add value to people and be significant. And thousands and thousands are going online. It's a free resource. But what's beautiful is we're starting to get a lot of emails and people that are saying, oh my goodness, I had a grandfather tell me that he took his 13-year-old grandson, and on the second day, his grandson looked at him and he said, Dad, or Grandpa, he said, I understand that good intentions are not even good unless they become good actions. He's 13. I had a mother of a 9-year-old, when they finished watching the little 3-minute video, looked at her and said, okay, what are we going to do today to add value to people? And her little 9-year-old said, I'm going to open door for people. Hmm. Every time I see you by a door, I'm going to open door, and I'm going to smile and say, have a good day. He came home that evening, and she said, well, how was your day? And, oh, he's beaming. He said, Mom, he said, I opened 42 doors today. And what I love about intentional living is this is a great book for your children. Mm-hmm. We talk about mentoring our children and helping them. Mm-hmm. There's not a greater way to help your children than to begin helping them right now to learn to live intentionally, and intentionally every day add value to people. So I'm just so excited because I think that this is a life changer mm-hmm. for a lot of people, a life changer for a lot of families, I think.
What do you hope to see actually will happen? You said life change, but what kind of life change are you hoping to see?
Well, mass movements don't start with a mass, they start with one or a few. Yeah. And we're hoping to develop a movement of significance and adding value to people until I would love in 2 years to have chicken soup of the soul of significance and just tell stories. And so we're looking and we're believing in a year's time or in 2 years' time, we're going to get 1 million stories. And when people get the book, that we even tell them how to do their story, to send it in to us. And we're just going to collect a bunch of stories of significance, which then we're going to put out to others so they can go online and see them. And it just kind of encourages them. And that's what we want to do.
For resources, books, and Bible studies mentioned in the show, visit edstetzer.com. And while you're there, check out past episodes or read the latest study and analysis from Lifeway Research. Thanks for joining us on The Exchange. We hope you'll be back with us again next week.